Good afternoon, everyone. How are you? And thank you for being here on the last day of APHA in the last session. This is work that I did with my PhD chair and other members of the committee, and it's innovative. It's never been published, and this is the first time that I'm publicly presenting this portion of the thesis. I'm giving you a little background on what I was testing. I'm looking at risk proneness and its relationship to depressive symptoms. It's vital in understanding health behaviors in adolescents, and I selected the 1998 NLSY, National Longitudinal Survey on Youth Young Adult Cohort, which is collected by the Center for Human Resource Research at Ohio State University. And I chose this because of the mental health measures and what I had of behavioral health assessment. So we're looking at how sensation seeking operates in predicting alcohol use and sexual behavior among adolescents using a weighted path analysis. And by introducing the weighting technique, particularly with respect to the calculation of the covariance matrix, we are going to be able to make inferences about subsamples and also extend generalizability and reliability. So some of the research questions, does self-rated risk proneness, remember the psychologists call risk proneness sensation seeking, predict health behaviors in cross-sectional path analysis? This is not longitudinal, by the way. Does self-rated risk proneness mediate the effects of health behavior inputs on health behaviors over time, hence the use of path analysis, got a mediator in there, in the middle, and does risk proneness mediate the role of cognition in health and the causal direction of presage intention when determining health risk decision making in weighted versus non-weighted? It's NLSY is renowned for oversampling. It was instituted in 1979 as a labor survey among women. The young adult cohort is actually a group of children that were assessed starting in 1994 at the age of 15. There's various cohorts that led up to that. Most of it's self-administered, and it is also known for oversampling minorities, particularly African Americans. So the data then need to be weighted against the race distribution of the U.S. utilizing the raw weight variable, which I'm going to explain to you, provided for each case record. Every national data set generally has raw weights. So something for you to consider when you do your own analysis. And in order to normalize that sample against the U.S. population, you need to use an algebraic weight formula, which I applied in SPSS. And this is developed by Owen Schoen, 1983, Little and Rubin, published in their book, Incomplete Data in Sample Surveys. So the NLSY has mainly been used to look at employment and wage trends, but not necessarily these relationships, and this post-stratification procedure is necessary to reduce bias and standard error. This is more justification, some citations there, which I'm going to show you why I was able to use this method. Lang, you're going to introduce heteroscedasticity in your analysis if you don't use weighting. And Stapleton, who's published more recently in structural equation modeling, gives a couple of justifications in 2002 and 2006. So this was the model, my a priori model. I used Bronfenbrenner. That was the three levels, the micro, meso, exo system, if you're familiar with that, macro system, in the ecological behavior of adolescents. And there's a transition that happens, there's an altered environment, some kind of stressor comes in, looking at risk proneness or sensation seeking, what is the likelihood of engaging in risk behavior, and the outcomes I looked at were alcohol use and sexual behavior. National data set, just to give you an overview. So remember though, this is not a random sample. The primary sampling unit is by household. It's also a cluster sample. So it meaning that the states with the high, or the regions, actually census regions, with the highest population are sampled first. So again, we have to implement what Stapleton calls design effect adjustment. This is a little bit about the data. The sample size is 4,648 with mean substitution. We could argue about imputation methods if you want after. Age, gender, race, median age is about 16.7. You have an oversampling of blacks, as you can see, because it's about 12 to 15% in the U.S. population. And these are scales that I collapsed down that they're actually individual items, and I collapsed them, and I tested for alpha reliability, et cetera. So those with the neighborhood quality, depressive symptoms that's coming from the CESD, risk proneness from Zuckerman's sensation-seeking work, which he started in the late 70s, alcohol use within the last 30 days. Remember, we need temporality here. We're not talking about a year because people don't remember what they've done. And sexual risk-taking would be how many partners, condom use, most recent time had sex, and whether or not you were using birth control. So that's just a little bit of the distribution. Gender's fairly even. You can see huge difference in race, age, again, around fairly even. And that was just one of the scales on the distribution, how well the biological parents get together. So there's fairly good dispersion. We're trying to follow Gaussian normal distribution. So here's the discussion about the weighting method. What really spawned this, and I will tell you, honestly, because I work in applied mathematics, I'm very lucky as a social scientist to be surrounded by such great mathematicians at the Center for Operations Research, Rutgers University, founded by my deceased boss, Peter Hammer. From Owen Schoen's little proof here, you see this is the weighting cell estimator, the way they conceptualized it. So the T is the weight for each observation. So when you look at a data set, you pull up the data and you pull up the weights. Each case is going to have a weight, a raw weight. And it's usually, at least in the NLSY, it's multiple digits. It's 6, 7, 8, 9 digits. What I'm doing is I'm going to convert it into, so transform, remember the word trans, into a decimal value. And that's what this is just a breakout. The T on the bottom is telling you that you're summing the weights for all the cases multiplied by the population mean, remember the population mean, over the sample mean. And this is ad infinitum over and over on the next few slides. So again, you have to convert it to relative weights, meaning a proportion of that group in the population that was sampled based on race, age, and gender. So what you're trying to do is, I'll repeat it again, design effect adjustment. Whenever you have a sample, you want to be sure that it's representative of the population. So if whatever the sample is, it doesn't matter whether it's people with HIV, it's people, older people who have coronary heart disease, whatever it is, you want there to be a distribution that reflects the population. So here, again, it's just another way of expressing what we're going to be doing. We're taking the weights, the sum of the weights, we're multiplying it by the actual total sample divided by the population divided by this, right. Okay, again, what you're going to get is, this is the method, you're going to get the result is a higher weighter value for that group size that is oversampled in order to compensate for underrepresentation of that particular race or ethnic cluster. So if we were doing 3, and I know that doesn't add to 1 on the other side, but you would make a nominal weight for each one based on the average or mean of each one. So again, Stapleton, she talks about this in her 2002 paper and in her 2006 paper in structural equation modeling, what to do with the raw weights. And that's also has bolstered this argument. So there's an unequal selection of probability. The population mean must be estimated by the weighted mean. According to Stapleton, the unbiased population mean results in equal inclusion of probabilities, which requires normalization of the raw weight. So that's the design effect adjustment. I know the math is intimidating, it's alienating and overwhelming, but you'll see because I did how I implemented an SPSS. So what happens next is we are going to transform. We've done the weights. We're now going to apply that as a covariate, as she says, to the calculation of the variance-covariance matrix in order to implement the path analysis in AMIS. Okay, so what you do simply in SPSS, which is the easiest program to use because it's point and click, you select analyze, then you click on descriptive statistics, followed by the function frequency. You use the revised raw sample weight that they give you from, in this case it was Ohio State, And now you're going to print out the sum of the weights of all the cases in this data, 4,648, with the mean substitution. And now you're going to have a new weight that's created with the following formula. It would be the raw weight, remember it's 6, 7, 8, 9 digits, which is comprised of race, gender, and ethnicity. Race, gender, and age. And the number of cases in the total cohort and the sum of the raw weights. That's what you're getting. So a little example here. This is a very simple example from Shandor Zedmak. He's now a professor in the UK, actually, was one of our PhD students at Rutcore. He showed me this. So you've got, say you have 4 cases in each of those respective weights. The sum of the weight for N, 4, is 6.5. That's the right column. Now you're going to, for each one, you're going to calculate a new adjusted weight. That's what's on the very right-hand side, which totals up to 4, which is the N equals 4. So this normalized weight was applied in all the analysis executed, and even while performing, I did discriminant Mankova path analyses, the weight command was on. I have read papers that are published where they did just click weight on, and it did not change the results. That's because they didn't transform the raw weights or apply it correctly. And that's what I'm going to hopefully retest with their data. Okay, so these are the weighted path analysis results. And they're generally consistent in the non-weighted as well. The higher neighborhood qualities correlated with higher perceived parental closeness, poorer neighborhood qualities related to higher depression. Higher neighborhood quality and higher alcohol use are also associated. Poor neighborhood quality influences higher sexual risk-taking, lower perceived parental closeness between the mother and the biological father also promotes higher risk proneness, and poor perceived parental closeness between mother and the bio father is also related to elevated sexual risk-taking. And finally, higher depression scores are associated with increased risk proneness and greater sexual risk-taking. And risk proneness leads to greater alcohol use, and greater alcohol use promotes sexual risk-taking. So that was the fully saturated model, as I was describing earlier, and just what I outlined. This is the unweighted, and there are the beta coefficients with the error terms, and that's the weighted. So how do we know? Well, here's some comparisons of the fit indices. Again, not hugely different, but the chi-square is higher, which indicates it's a better fit on the model. The RMSCA is a little bit higher, too, for the weighted group. And one of the we should talk about some of the limitations of these data, and this is something to consider if you ever use secondary data. All the measures are self-rated, and they're subject to the youth's responsibility to assess behavior over the course of the past month or year. In this case, it's 30 days. The primary sampling unit is household, and most of the survey questionnaire is self-administered, so they may tend to underrate or overrate their behaviors, and their perception of their environment may be enhanced by their commitment to the survey or their siblings. It's mothers and children, that's where we got it from, and the weights are inconsistent in multiple waves. They did change the calculation in 2000. Finally, this is the standardized total effects, so meaning when you look at the path diagrams, how these add together, and you can see there's the total effect of the weighted data on the right-hand side is higher than the non-weighted. Forgive me, I did not edit that correctly. Left column is non-weighted, right column is weighted data, so there is some difference. Since it's a probability cluster sample, which is a selection procedure determined by proportion of a population, we need this stratification procedure. The two standardized path models, one using the weighted variance-covariance matrix and the other unweighted, reveal slight differences. While they're not marked, applying the transform weight does present implications for generalizability and reliability. It also could be there's not, if you're using mean substitution, now you've got regression to the mean, so you've got problems with dispersion. The weighting technique is critical when you're applying it to primary data. For example, if you're going out there and do a collection in the state of New Jersey, where I'm from, you want to make sure that you have urban, rural, suburban sample. And if you can't and you happen to oversample, you want to be sure then you're able to correct for that, adjust for that. And because this has been introduced, and it's never been applied before to these data, in order to normalize against the U.S. population, it does allow you to make inferences about subsamples, which I don't show here, and I did do in my thesis. We divided it out by mother's educational attainment by race, and we saw differences there. So what are the implications for future research? No published literature documents the weighting technique generated from the NLSY. The algebraic weight formula used to transform the new raw weights has never been ever discussed. I've never found any citation. If you can, please let me know. I would love to see it. The raw weights definitely need to be modified before they're implemented in multivariate analysis. When we wrote to NLSY, Center for Human Resource Research, they told us only to use them for descriptive statistics, which is not correct mathematically. And if you were using overrepresentation of a particular race or ethnicity, you would want to, again, apply it to ensure generalizability and replicability. So this is important for policy and intervention, because we want to know exactly how each of these subgroups is affected. And I thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to any questions you have. Thank you.
We have 2 minutes for questions.
Okay, go ahead.
You said the data is not a random sample.
That's right.
But how are you drawing some inference about it? Like, you're using chi-square to compare between setting two models?
No. I mean, I say it's not random because of the way that it's sampled.
So how do you draw inference for a non-random sample? I mean...
Well, what would you suggest?
Well, there's other techniques. Yeah, okay. Not the direct method, not a click in this SPSS. Mm-hmm. You have to use what's called randomized mm-hmm. procedure,
okay.
which is using bootstrapping or other procedure to draw an inference.
Okay.
That's what we do in non-random sample usually.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Any other question? I think it's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.